I think the Smith Memorial Arch looks like architecture, and I think that's how most people see it. But this is a monument, and that's what public art certainly was about then. I'm Stacy Levy. I'm trained as a sculptor and a forester, and I'm an artist. You think about the height of the Smith Memorial Arch, it can be seen from so far away. When it was built, it didn't have massive traffic going through it. And now you can drive by it, and it holds up. The scale actually works very well for traffic.
You're already in the park when you approach this arch, which makes it kind of oddly positioned. My name is Jeff Cohen. I'm an architectural historian who focuses on the late 19th century. The donor, Richard Smith, was thinking about something that had happened 15 years earlier. This was the site of the Centennial Exposition, the big World's Fair in Philadelphia, almost all of whose buildings were swept away except for Memorial Hall and Horticultural Hall and one small state pavilion. And Smith must have been thinking of the monumentality of that had disappeared.
Parks were so different. People went to the park to sort of promenade and to be seen. But now we go to parks to hide ourselves, to disappear. You want to go and have an experience where you don't see anybody. There's a very different sense about nature, which was quite at bay, and no desire to be anywhere near the wilderness, which is something that now we do have.
The Smith Memorial Arch is representative of a notable change in American forms of commemoration between the period of the Civil War and when the monument was produced. My name's Michelle Bogart, and I teach American art at Stony Brook University. The kind of memorials that are built immediately after the Civil War are basically commemorating the dead. So they tend to represent soldiers standing at ease with their rifles next to them, so they're not actually fighting. And about 1890, there starts to be more of an emphasis on Civil War memorials as celebrations of American unity, because people start to argue that it's that for which the war was fought. And so the memorials take on a much larger cast.
There's quite a congregation of people on the arch, many of them Civil War generals, but there are also some civilians. Probably the most important of these is Smith, who made a fortune in type founding, and in 1891 decided he would give $500,000 to the construction of this arch. A portrait of him in sculpture lies in the pedestal under the right-hand column. There are also two other supporting players, we might call them, who are lower down around the corners at the right and left end. At the right is the architect, James H. Windrum, and at the left, oddly enough, is the banker, John B. Guest, who was the person who, after Smith's death, moved this to its final completion with all the sculpture in 1912.
It's not a classical monument. It's got this weird curved arch. It's got these statues that don't quite fit. And so it makes it very idiosyncratic, which I really love about it.
The military figures in the Smith Memorial Arch are all considered sons of Pennsylvania. So they reflect the state pride in the role that the Keystone State played in the preservation of the Union, which was quite significant. I'm Gregory Irwin. I'm a professor of history at Temple University, where I specialize in military history, and I have a longstanding interest in the American Civil War. Several of the figures in the sculptural grouping played a major role in the Battle of Gettysburg. When Robert E. Lee, commander of the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia, invaded south-central Pennsylvania, many feared that he would go after Philadelphia, which was really the largest and most important northern city just above the Mason-Dixon line.
The two figures that you see at the tops of the columns at the various highest point of the monument as you face it, General Meade and General Reynolds, are the paramount figures, particularly for Philadelphians and their experience of the war. My name's Andrew Coldren. I'm a consultant for the Civil War Museum of Philadelphia and currently curator of the Salem County Historical Society in Salem, New Jersey.
John Fulton Reynolds is the standing figure atop the right-hand column. Reynolds was an outstanding combat commander. Everyone in the Army admires this son of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And on July 1st, 1863, Reynolds is going to be the officer on the spot at Gettysburg who recognizes he can't let the Confederates have the high ground south of the town, that he has to hold on to that. So, in effect, he makes the decision to fight at Gettysburg. George Gordon Meade stands on the left-hand column. Because Meade is new to command at Gettysburg, he's going to rely a lot on Reynolds' advice to fight at Gettysburg. And when Reynolds is killed, he'll pick another son of Pennsylvania, someone who grew up at Norristown, Winfield Scott Hancock. He'll more or less put him in charge.
As you look further down on the second level, this equestrian statues of General Hancock and General McClellan occupy a somewhat secondary position beneath the what might be considered the primary heroes.
Winfield Scott Hancock is the equestrian figure on the right-hand side of the arch, and Meade is going to rely on his judgment after John Reynolds is killed. George B. McClellan is the figure on horseback to the left of the arch. He certainly was a major figure in the Civil War. From a political angle, it's interesting to see McClellan and Hancock so prominently represented because the two of them were both Democrats. And the Civil War was viewed by Republicans as their war. Abraham Lincoln was our first Republican president. But after the war, Hancock will run for president in 1880 and come close to winning. James Garfield will win a narrow victory.
Please look at the inscription at the base of the monument toward the left, and you'll see in the text examples of the kind of way in which people in the post-war period wanted to remember and wanted future generations to remember. It's all about unity and reunification and basically putting this monumental struggle behind us and almost too suggesting as if the pain and struggle of the Civil War was just a subset of the American Revolution.